Welcome. This is Econa Days Unplugged, and it is May 31st, the last day of May in 2017. I am Ann Picker, Econa Days Chief Economist, and with me are Econa Days Jeremy Hawkins, our man in the UK, and Mark Pender, our vigilant observer of all things US. There is an abundance of new economic data this week globally. So let's start across the pond. Jeremy?
Okay. Well, as you say, there's been lots of numbers coming out and indeed still due to come out as we speak here in Europe. But I suppose really we should concentrate upon the most important data as far as ECB is concerned. And that's released earlier today when we had the flash HICP inflation data for the month of May. Particularly important this time round because there's obviously been a lot of uncertainty about just where Eurozone inflation is heading because of distortions to the figures we've had as a result of Easter. As it turned out, we saw a much sharper than anticipated decline in overall prices, which means that at least on a provisional basis, we've now got inflation running at an annual rate in the Eurozone of just 1.4%. That's down from 1.9% in the final April data, and essentially takes us back to where we stood in February. So sort of peering through the volatility we had as a result of these Easter effects, it seems really that inflation is going nowhere in a hurry. And the headline story was very much replicated in the key core rates as well, both of which fell from 1.2% last time down to 0.9 or 1.0%, depending upon which particular measure you took. And again, that's pretty in line with where we stood in February. So it seems really that we can put much of a straight line through underlying trends in Eurozone inflation. And that's going to be particularly important, I think, as we go into next Thursday and the ECB meeting. As we talked about on previous calls, there's a lot of speculation at the moment that the ECB might finally change its long-standing forward guidance on with regards to interest rates and quantitative easing. People perhaps looking for a slightly less accommodative stance, given what had been the rise in inflation and signs of an improving real economy. In the light of the May inflation figures, that looks a little bit more questionable. But I think what we can safely say now is that whatever they do decide to do next week, it's not going to be much, and it's probably weren't going to have that much of an impact as far as the euro is concerned. The rest of the Eurozone figures, without going through them all, really continue to suggest that we're going to see a decent second quarter in terms of economic growth, probably up around about 0.6% on a quarter-on-quarter basis, and that would be in line with what appears to be a gradually accelerating economic recovery. As far as the rest of Europe's concerned, well, there's a fair wodge of numbers out of the UK over the last week or so, but that's almost irrelevant at the moment in the context of the upcoming political election. And for anyone who watches the pound, they'll notice that there's a very high correlation currently between the way the opinion polls are coming in and the actual performance of sterling itself. And sterling got a bit of a wobble, an additional wobble this morning when we had a new opinion poll coming out suggesting that what used to be a 20 percentage point or so lead in your polls for the current government had faded away into the possibility of what could be a hung parliament next week, meaning that the government wouldn't actually get a majority at all. Now, it should be said that this particular poll was based on a different methodology, and so it's not really consistent with others, but nonetheless, the average of polls currently is running around about 8% or so in favour of the Conservatives. And saying that's down 12 percentage points plus from where we were just a month or so ago. So at the moment, sterling very much subject to volatility as a result of what's going on in politics.
This is Mark. I have a question. There must be some kind of poll shock in the UK. We had Brexit, which was a shock result against the polls, and now we're getting these crazy swings in the polls right now. What are the voters saying? Polls.
The surprise, I think, in terms of, well, of course, after Brexit, as you mentioned, and indeed after the last general election, which the polls also got wrong, I think investors and as people in general are taking the polls with a good deal of caution. However, as much as they might have got it wrong previously, when you're talking about a percentage point lead of 20% or so, I think most investors were happy to go along with the idea that the current government over here would be returned. Now, although there has been volatility in the polls, polls, there's been a very clear trend decline in the government's position. And it's really just a case of whether that's going to be continued or whether perhaps it's found some kind of natural level now. So it means, I think, going into next Thursday, even if let's suppose we do see the government still being indicated to win well by a majority of 5 percentage points, you know, margins for error in the past means that almost whatever happens now, we're going to see Sterling reacting in some shape or form. At the end of the day, people don't necessarily totally believe the polls, but really there's not much else to go on.
What has changed to make the polls swing like that?
Really, I think it's unfortunately been the sort of a mishandling of the government's manifesto by Theresa May prior to the launch of the Tory party manifesto. So the Tories were comfortably ahead in these polls, and for all intents and purposes, it was a fairly stable performance as well. But as we've gone through the release of the Tory manifesto and the Labour Party manifesto, there's been some issues surrounding the government's aims with regards to social care reform. Indeed, they've been forced to instigate a U-turn on that. There's been confusion about the government's attitude towards Brexit. And so all of a sudden, what looked to be, you know, a slam dunk, as you might say, your side, is no longer the case. Expectations, I think, are still that the Conservative Party will win, but say there's much more of a question mark over it now. Just before I quickly finish, I should mention Switzerland, because we will get the first look at their first quarter GDP accounts Thursday morning our time. That's going to be important because a little while ago it looked as if the Swiss recovery was starting to gain some momentum. Of late, the numbers have started to look a little bit more questionable. And were we to see the national accounts show that exports are under pressure again, then it's just going to intensify the Swiss National Bank's resolve to prevent any further appreciation in its currency, and indeed may well see the SNB intervene in the foreign exchange markets again. Okay, that's my lot.
Thank you, Jeremy. Mark?
Well, I don't even know where to start. There is so much going on here. Let me just start, I guess, just by saying that the second quarter is not looking that huge snapback, big snapback that we are expecting from a very soft first quarter. We don't seem to be getting it. We had in April, last month's April employment report is really still the standout. Even today, this is Wednesday, we have pending home sales, and that measures contract signings in the resale market, the existing home sale market, and they fell. And home sales, new home sales and resales both fell in April. And housing starts and permits in April were very weak. And this is the big season for the housing sector. And it's not going in the right direction. And it's a reflection. It has to be ultimately a reflection of the consumer. And we had consumer spending for April that came out yesterday, Tuesday. It was okay. It wasn't great, but it was against a very soft comparison. So the April start for the consumer is a little bit on the soft side. Tomorrow, Thursday, we're going to be getting motor vehicle sales, which have been making and breaking all the retail sales reports this year. The first 3 months of the year were very weak, and then April we had a bit of a recovery, which is what we saw on the consumer spending for April, but not a great one. So we'll see, and the expectations are not that great. And the other thing that we have, and Jeremy was talking about it in Europe, is the inflation rate. We're getting the same thing over here. Inflation is going in the wrong, suddenly going in the wrong direction the last several months. We had the PCE core rate showing very marginal strength, and we're watching the year-on-year rates moving away from the 2% line to the 1.5% line for the core. We're going to get average hourly earnings, and I my guess is that the employment report on Friday, I think non-farm payroll is going to be a sideshow. That has been pretty solid, pretty strong, but these have not been really great jobs, and we're going to be getting average hourly earnings, and they've been doing the same thing. The couple reports have been going in the wrong direction, easing pressure, which means lower wage gains, or slowing wage gains. So that report will be very, and that's the missing piece, is wage power for consumer spending and also for the inflation picture. And it's also interesting, you know, because we had all these signs of pressure at the wholesale level from regional and anecdotal reports, price pressures. But these pressures don't seem to be actually appearing anywhere, and they seem to actually be evaporating, which is pulling out the rug from the Fed's FOMC meeting, where a rate hike is the seems to be almost a universal expectation. However, it's not going to be based on the surge in the second quarter economy, nor on increasing inflationary pressures. So they're going to be, it looks like, removing accommodation when the economy isn't really doing so hot. And so I guess it's the phantom second quarter recovery is, I think, the U.S. thing. And I think it's also, we'll have to look at the average, we'll have to look at average hourly earnings on Friday's report.
Mark, won't it be a key event when everybody in 2 weeks looks at the Fed's new forecasts and the dot plot, figuring out if the Fed has changed its forecast in any way in regard to rates? Because we all know that the Fed doesn't look at single numbers. They look at a longer range trend.
That's right. And that trend is curving lower. It's not just been April. I mean, we have to remember that the first quarter was weak. The numbers in those quarters were weak. So we're getting, I'm not sure what the feed loop is, the feedback loop for their forecasts are, if their forecasts are in any way swayed by their need to remove or their perceived plan to remove accommodation. They see their balance sheet as being too high and rates is unnaturally low. So, and will these influence what their actual perceptions are of the economy? I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But it would be hard. It would be hard to justify any increases in the core right now, the core rate of inflation, or really even any significant increases, even a tenth on the GDP. I think these things are going to probably have to stay flat. And if they do move lower, which I think is what's happening in the general expectations, economists are lowering, you see it, you are lowering their forecasts, especially for this year. There was the assumption of some kind of a fiscal stimulus deregulation boost somewhere in the economy later on in the year, but that all seems to be having faded, or seems to be fading right now. That will be interesting to see if the FOMC holds by its guns, or it seems like it's inevitable that they're going to remove accommodation, but I guess we'll have to find out.
Also, we'll find out this afternoon when the Beige Book is released for the meeting in 2 weeks.
Right.
We'll find out what the regional surveys tell us.
What the assessment are, and that assessment all year has been modest to moderate.
Right.
With the one thing being the tightening in the tightening in the labor market, which we continue to see. But we've seen that, and it has not triggered any kind of a significant or sustained impact on wages. So,
Japan has a similar issue. Unemployment there is currently 2.8%, and yet wages are not reflecting the tightness of the labor market either. So it's not just a U.S. problem.
It's interesting.
Can I ask a quick one with regards to the FOMC?
Yeah.
Does the FOMC have to tighten again in terms of interest rates before it starts moving towards quantitative tightening and actually reducing its balance sheet?
The schedule is going to be, or what the assumption is, that they're going to move in tandem on those two. They will, the assumption is they'll be raising rates one or two more times, perhaps two more times for the year, the general expectation. At the same time, they're going to begin to bring down their balance sheet, remove accommodation. There will be one gradual removal of a big buyer in the bond market, which will put upward pressure on long rates. So it'll be a combination of the two, and they expect to do it very predictably and very gradually. But if the economy keeps plugging along at this kind of very flat rate, there'll be questions on why they're removing accommodation.
Well, as far as the reduction of the balance sheet, isn't that supposed to be not a signal of monetary policy change, but rather just a move towards normalization?
Yeah, that's their lingo. Their lingo is that they're not tightening, that they're removing accommodation. But this is bureaucratic speak. This is, you know, it's designed, you know, aimed at, you know, at hiding things, or, you know, it's a euphemism.
Well, Mark, on that note, are there any estimates to, let's suppose the Fed reduces its balance sheet by, let's suppose, $1 trillion. Is there any estimate as to effectively what that would be the equivalent of in terms of raising the Fed funds rate?
No, I haven't seen correlations like that. I think the general assumption is they're going to bring it back to, or they're going to bring it down to the $2 trillion area. It's at about $4.5 trillion right now. About two-thirds of that treasuries and the rest mortgage-backed securities. And the mortgage-backed securities is interesting because, you know, that's tied to the housing market. Right. And that's more sensitive. Going into the recession, their balance sheet was about a trillion, a little bit lower. And that's what I guess they need to manage monetary policy. Buy and sell treasuries. So they're probably and the economy is larger than it was then. So they're probably, you know, $2 trillion seems to be a general expectations over how many years has to be decided. They're going to do it gradually at first and then at an increasing rate, lower their reinvestments of their rolling over maturities. They'll be doing it in 3-month intervals as far as gauging. And it's going to start off slow and then pick up speed. That is the general plan. And all the details have to be worked out as far as how far that goes in the future and how much at what pitch that comes down.
Thank you, guys. Well, I guess we're going to find out about all that in the next couple of weeks.